I'm well. I'm well.
Oh, good, good.
How are you this morning?
Well, I'm good.
Okay. So my first question for you is, where do you see yourself in the landscape of the music industry? What role are you playing?
Well, I think right now, as a sonic file, I'm looking to enhance what I've already built in the sense of being somewhere in between soul and electronica with a bit more of the environmental and escapism type of a space or an area for people that really come to me for that that sound, that experience that transports them somewhere with sensuality as the base, not necessarily sexuality or themes of love and romance all the time, but just a feeling, a spiritual sense of sensuality is really what I'm going for.
We follow each other on Twitter as well, and you're an active tweeter. How would you say social media has impacted you as an artist regarding marketing and connecting with fans, both new and old?
Well, I have to admit, it isn't really my favorite thing to do, simply because to be effective at it, you have to put a lot of energy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, there are times when I can become so involved with talking to fans and sharing my verbal ideas and, expressing myself in a way outside of making music that it actually takes me away from making music. So, or takes me away from actually doing anything creative, because, sitting there and talking to people, as much as everyone loves it, it actually takes time to do that,
Right.
So the negative side of it not so great side of it, I won't say negative, but it's just not so great side, is that it takes a lot of time. But the bonus is that you're able to get a perspective of what people are thinking up to the second. And I think that's really cool, because what I've been doing in the past few months is reshaping day by day how I want people to visualize what I create. So I've gone a lot heavier into providing images of what I think my music sounds like, and how that is just interesting how that's having an effect on people that read my tweets and see the pictures I post, and they're understanding a bit better the world that I've created for myself in my own head that I've been trying to share with people for years. Now there's a system for me to do that a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so much of our social experience, before social media, even if it was television or film, the visual medium always creates a much broader idea in people's minds than in terms of when you're trying to really point or shape a specific thing. When they see it, for some reason, they get it a lot more clearly than when they read it, because it leaves a lot of room for interpretation.
True.
And with the sort of nondescript way of me creating this musical scape, a lot of the things that were inspiring to me or the life that I have, the unique kind of life that I have, many people have never seen or experienced these things. So just hearing it, they don't relate necessarily. Now I'm showing them things that they can really understand, and it makes sense. So it's like the soundtrack to the things that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. In addition to everything else that you've been doing, you've released a few mixtapes, namely For Players Only, and most recently, The Modern Textures, Volume 1 for the Future.fm. What freedom does the creation of a mixtape offer that an LP doesn't?
Well, the mixtape concept for me, see, I'm a DJ before everything else. The idea of a mixtape that say Drake and Lil Wayne do, that's not really a mixtape. That's an album that's free.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did with Players Only was take the pre-release music, the other albums, the other singles I did, and I asked DJ Mars, who was on the TV show Master the Mix with me, mm-hmm. to put them together as if, because he was just introduced to my music when we were on the show, and he was like, "Yo, man, how come I don't know about you as much as an artist as I should, as I think people should? I think I need to make a mixtape of your stuff so people can really hear it." And so it was to really put it in a format that people were consuming music today, with a little bit of a DJ's perspective of a mixtape versus, you know, we just have these extra 10 songs and we want to put them up online for free. And that's cool because, you know, a lot of times in this microwave society, certain things get skipped over. And I think in my case, with not really having a giant marketing company behind me, a lot of people have not had the opportunity to touch my music or be touched by it.
Mm-hmm.
But because I spend so much time making a particular type of quality, when they find it, they're sort of mad at me for not finding it. And I think that's funny, but that's a testament to all the great musicianship and the time and effort we put into crafting these records. So they last forever. When you get it, it doesn't even matter the first time people hear it. And now with Frank Ocean, people are like, he's got some kind of new sonic or whatever. Then they hear my stuff and they say, wait a minute, you say this was out 8 years ago or whatever?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's very interesting to get those types of comments. And that's another way social media has been helping me is to see people's shock, to be honest, that I exist on that level with that level of quality.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I could just finish the other part of the question was about
the freedom.
Yeah, and you know, as a DJ, the modern Texas is more of my DJ style, and it's just I'm trying to get a lot more into showing other types of things to people. You know, other forms of electronic or other forms of production style that are interesting and that make you feel good and aren't just about having pop star A, B, or C on top of it, or superstar DJ trying to pump his style of mixing down your throat. This is about really exposing you to a lot of different sounds.
You mentioned Master of the Mix. Why did you think a show like that would be attractive in the landscape of reality TV, and why did you get involved with it?
Well, when it was initially pitched to me, it was designed to showcase the lifestyle of a international DJ, or you know, even a national DJ, someone who travels for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the original cast were all relatively established on different levels. I mean, none of them were starting off. Some of them make more money than others, but at the end of the day, they all had successful careers. And they were looking for an opportunity to shed light on the art form that they and we and I, we all love, so that people could start to have a better understanding of the differences between someone who actually can look at a crowd and find a group of records to make those people happy and someone who stands up there and presses buttons and isn't interactive with the crowd at all, so that the average person could start to understand when they go to a club, I'm not having a good time, or I'm having a great time. Now they can know, they can see, they can have an inside perspective into that world, plus really understand the process and the things we go through as having, you know, as being travelers and having to be on the road all the time, you know, two-thirds or more of the year away from our families and doing all these things. There's some glamour, but there's also a lot of time alone and away from your people. So for me, it was great to show that. I didn't necessarily have any interest in being on TV, and I think there was hesitation from all of us to be involved with something that was campy and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So the results in terms of whether or not people look good or bad are still up in the air. Some people feel as though they were portrayed well. Some people feel as though it was fixed and all that stuff, you know. But at the end of the day, I think it definitely has raised a certain awareness into DJ culture, which is outside of what Hollywood has adopted as DJ culture.
Okay. And speaking of DJ culture, I'm gonna move into a question that is near and dear to me, and that is, what I have dubbed the premier LA party, Kiss and Grind. I have been an attendee of Kiss and Grind since MJ Higgins, and I've watched its growth. I remember when it was in the art gallery, and it felt very much like the juke joint downstairs in the basement, and you and Garth were walking around telling everybody, get off the wall. There is no standing on the wall. We are dancing in here. And, you know, we could go upstairs and there'd be drummers. It was just it was a vibe that, for me as an L.A. native, I had not experienced in my city before. You know, we've had our heavy underground hip-hop culture, especially in Lamert and Chaos Network and The Good Life throughout the years, but things have changed. And the older I've gotten, seem like those kind of soulful events are few and far between. And so I wanted to know, one, how did you come from Philly to L.A. and give us something that we did not have already? How did you know we needed it, one? Two, what was your original vision for Kiss and Grind? And lastly, has it become what you initially set out for it to be, or has it taken on a life of its own?
Well, me coming to L.A. a lot for many, many years, the one thing I always found fascinating was even in the soul places or the places where hip-hop and stuff was, nobody really danced, and I didn't understand that, per se. You know, I thought that was kind of a curious behavior. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to be involved in the Hollywood scene a lot more, they really don't dance in Hollywood, and that was shocking because the people are beautiful, the places are amazing, and you know, even now, the sound systems and stuff and the design of the clubs, people can say what they want about the clientele, but the venues are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, well, how come it just doesn't seem like it's any fun? You know, I would go to red carpet parties, and it would look amazing. It looks amazing. Everybody's on the red carpet, and you go inside, and it's like somebody died. It feels like a funeral, you know? So I wanted to really give the people that I thought were amazing the experience that you get on the East Coast and in Europe and in places where the level of pretentious behavior is way, way, way down and people are having more fun. So what I said to Garth was, yo, I need to create an experience that I enjoy for myself when I go and DJ the party. Like, it's one thing to get paid and spend for a bunch of people who look hot and are standing still with a drink in their hand, fist pumping. That's cool. But I really get a lot more spiritual energy from seeing people dance and have a good time and smiles on their faces and their hair looking crazy and all those kinds of things. Another thing I felt was that there's not enough interaction based on each person's ability to communicate to the next person. It's always about what you have sitting at your table, what kind of car you have outside. So I wanted to create a space where there was no VIP, there was no celebrity. It was just everybody in here is a human being, and the thing that's brought us here to this day and at this time is this music and this energy and this idea of being together and having a great time. So Kiss and Grind, I came up with that because in Philly we have this saying, when you go out with a girl, if you know, your boys would always grill you the next day, yo, man, what happened with you and that girl? Man, nothing really went down. They would say, well, did you at least get a KG? A kiss and a grind. you know, I wanted that experience. I wanted people to feel free enough to touch and to dance close and to kiss if they want, or whatever they wanted to do. And MJ Higgins in particular lent itself to that because it was like an illegal venue. There was no air conditioning. It was pitch black. Mm-hmm. And on the dance floor, you know, you had to really lose all your inhibitions. Well, it helped people lose their inhibitions. And then the fact that it had a fully curated art gallery upstairs every month added a level of intrigue. And it put the special sauce on it, really, for me, because I was looking forward to see what the young lady got up there every month. And I was stimulated in so many ways. So that party was special in that era because it was growing, it was new. I think I engage a lot of the people on the tail end of their party careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for them to have to go out from the party scene was really special. You know, they were, if they're in their 30s and, you know, mid 30s, and right now they probably can't come out as much.
Right.
So I didn't necessarily have a vision past there at that time. Okay. But then afterwards I said, well, I was realistic and I was saying, well, you know, if we're playing Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson now in 5 to 7 years, that's not going to mean anything to anybody. I recognize that because the clientele that was coming was younger and younger and younger. And they were coming for slightly different reasons. And I was still trying to figure out how to maintain the integrity of the party without blatantly catering to a radio fan. And I think what I did was to just kind of allow it to grow and allow other people to touch it, brought in some co-promoters, some people with some other ideas to get their perspectives and see where their friends or their people wanted to take it. And the one thing I just keep consistent is I stay involved with it. You know, I present a certain type of music and a certain way of DJing, which is to allow the records to work for you versus you trying to do what I call a Kid Capri and spin 75 records in 20 minutes. Not right. Many people can do that well. And I think when you do that, unless you're as a greater performer as a Kid Capri, you just confuse the crowd. There's no consistent energy. There's no flow. People aren't able to get into a groove and stuff like that. So I think as long as I continue in the vein of selecting great music, putting people in places where the sound system is good so they can actually feel the music, you know, continuing to find interesting ways to make it fun, then it'll be good. You know, if I lose that, then I'll stop it.
Mm. Okay.
I think that answers your question.
It does. It does, and I hope it continues on because it's still an amazing party. It's grown exponentially. And I like the new vibe with the guest DJs. I know I was there for Kid Capri and Biz Markie, but I am biased. I prefer when you're at the helm. So I want to talk a little bit about your background, where you come from. You're one of many talented artists that hail from Philly. And can you tell me briefly what that ecosystem was like growing up and the impact it's had on you as an artist?
Well, it's a couple ways. We had, for me, it's two different journeys. Sort of, they ran simultaneously, the DJ career, the music career.
Okay.
In Philadelphia, the DJ was very dominant in terms of block parties, where out there, it's a lot more of a block, a grid structure. So every block might have had like 40 to 50 kids. We didn't really have to go too far like we do in L.A. to find friends and have play dates and all that. You just go outside and there's 15 people waiting for you. Mm-hmm. So when we had block parties, you know, each block started to develop a reputation for the best DJ or the best party. And there was a culture around the city of 30 or 40 DJs that were basically presenting music to all the people. What we were hearing on the radio was a lot of Philadelphia international stuff. Teddy Pendergrass, the OJs, they were a big part of our community because they were from Philly, or the music that was being created by them was from Philly. With Gamble and Huff downtown. And as producers and writers, or as aspiring producers and music industry people, they were always in our view because the media embraced them locally. You know, Gamble and Huff did this, Teddy Pendergrass did that. We always saw that. We were seeing the entertainment business through their eyes, basically. And as we grew, and as hip hop and everything grew, and Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince and all the early rappers started to have national success, they didn't really look towards Russell Simmons and Run-DMC and all those guys as much as they did towards Gamble and Huff and the Philly International movement. So So the design of our sound, it was only natural that it was soulful and sort of based on real bona fide music versus hardcore hip hop, which wasn't really our culture. That's something we adopted from New York. The soul is our culture, and that's what we were really raised with in the churches and on the streets. So the early days, early 90s, when everyone was really cutting their teeth in this business, there was just like an enormous amount of great musicians, and everyone was really figuring it out together and really growing together. We grew up together as people and also as creative entities. And there was just a run there where every year it seemed like somebody was having this amazing success. You know, Jazzy Jeff, Boyz II Men, Jahna, all these things that came from us. It was awesome music. Soul Child, Jill. Then you had Floetry find their way to Philadelphia to learn how to be a part of that sound. You know, it was crazy for a while. You know, I just think that unfortunately coming to LA has shown me one thing, that you need to be great in the entertainment business. You have to have two components. You have to have the sound and the look. And one thing that people that come out of LA are great at is the look. And they were on top of it in terms of making sure that they sold a concept to people that they that allowed you to grow and move and flow and change forms. The Philly vibe really had this sort of retro, soulful person image, but that wasn't Philly. That's the thing that was really confusing to me at the end of the day, is that people looked at Jill Scott and said, oh my God, everybody in Philly wears dashikis and
right.
has giant afros. The reality is everybody except her was driving Benzes and, you know, trying to be Puff Daddy. You know, so it was kind of an interesting thing that happened in terms of the imaging and the spin that the entertainment business put on that sound. I think it sort of destroyed it a little bit.
You think they did that just because that's what people expected because of the sound? And so they felt like that look matched the sound that was coming out of there?
I think it's that. And I think that a part of it is two of the largest stars, if not the largest stars, to come out of that new soul movement, D'Angelo and Badu, were really Southern people, you know, and really had a Southern spin and were super confident about this. Or at least Badu was super confident about her Southernness, you know, and the artsiness of it, you know. I don't buy new clothes. I don't do this. You know, she's so domineering in her presentation that I think, to be very honest, everything else was an extension of her, you know, of the extension of when people thought neo soul. I don't give a damn who was singing. They saw Badu,
right?
You know, and at the end of the day, Alicia Keys probably cleaned it up, but she never claimed it. You know, she never said I'm a neo soul artist, and it's probably because her musicianship wasn't as good as the construction of her records was like soul music light.
Mm-hmm.
So the soul music community probably didn't scream out to claim her as much, so she came off as more as a pop star.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if more artists had taken the Alicia Keys approach and just being a great entertainer and a great artist and just made their music the way they saw it fit, then I think there would have been a lot less stereotypes based around it.
Mm.
Now, in terms of the electronica side of it, that was so under the radar because at the time, people didn't really take it seriously. But we were making 12-inch vinyl records and releasing things through independent record stores all around the world and building careers, touring most major markets in Europe and Europe, U.S., Canada, and Asia. You know, every weekend, you know, you're on the plane going somewhere, traveling, either presenting your music as a performer or as a DJ. And a lot of the people from Philly, King Britt, Josh Wink, Diesel Boy, Diplo is now probably the biggest person who has come out of there in the past couple of years. We were all learning or developing the electronica culture in Philadelphia at the same time, in the club life, and importing and exporting other DJs and other performers. And it was all happening at the same time. And for a small period of time, it all merged. Everybody was going at each other, going to each other's parties. All the people were getting a dose of all of it. And I think that's when the music sounded the most interesting. Coming out of the city is when it was all, when everybody was hanging together and they were sharing ideas and sharing energy.
Well, can you tell me, as my final question, in 2002, you gave us International Affairs, 2006, Bold and Beautiful, and in 2013, we're going to get Love Machine. Where will this album take us on the Duplay joyride?
I hope to get you something before 2013.
I hope so, too.
It may or may not be Love Machine right away. I'm not sure.
In the process of
making Love Machine, a whole other direction of song came out, and I think that's really what it was a little challenging for me. This is the first time where I actually paid attention to what everybody else was doing, and the reason why I did is because suddenly pop stars have a sonic that's similar to mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I respect, I'm not like a lot of people who say, I'm just going to do what I do and forget what everybody else says or thinks. I respect the listener as someone who has a valid opinion. So if Chris Brown has a record that sells a lot, I listen to that record and I analyze it from a technical standpoint. Why is it good? You know, if there's a record that just has a bass line and a snap, a finger snap, I listen to that and I process why that is good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then once I digest it, then I can go back and create something that I feel as though is right for me, that I think the average person or the person I'm trying to reach, which is a lot more people, can still get where I'm coming from and not necessarily be turned off by an experience that's very foreign. And at the same time, I need to collect more things to talk about. You know, I need to have more experiences. I need to see more life. I needed to feel more things and decide how I want to position myself as a man moving forward. And that's really what I think I've come full circle around to, is to really understand who I am completely. So I'll be even more confident in my manhood and in the way that I'll present the art that I have coming up.
I am looking forward to that because your music has always been so sensual. It's love-making music. If it's not dance music, it's love-making music to me. So I'm interested to see the I don't want you to lose that as a listener, but I'll be interested to see where you go as a part of
your I can't lose it because the one thing is a big part of my sound is the way I sound vocally.
Mm-hmm.
So that is only going to sound so different. And if anything, I've listened to some of the songs, or I've had a chance to perform some of the songs, and I know the ones that affect people in a special way, and I've sort of focused a bit more on those songs, at least in terms of the way, the melodies and the sounds and the tone of voice. So I think the zone that you like, I'm going to go deep into that.
Okay. Well, Victor, I thank you so much for your time. I've been wanting to get you on the phone for a while. And, you know, Black Is, we're a small but mighty publication, and we support you wholeheartedly and will continue to, because we believe in what you're doing and the music that you make and the projects that you're behind, and appreciate you for bringing Kiss and Grind to our city, because we needed it. We were hungry for that. And I wanted to extend an invitation to you if ever you're in L.A. And I don't know if you've had a chance to check out our podcast series. We do a podcast called The Black Is Break, where we talk about a myriad of topics that pertain to the Black community and the world at large, really. If ever you're interested in hanging out with us and participating, we'd love to have you.
Okay, sure. I'll definitely do that. No problem.
Yeah, let's stay in touch.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.